Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, welcome to this edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, an East Atlanta Neighborhood Association says they're being left out of the conversation regarding the site for Atlanta's public safety training facility. I'll speak with Chase, who's the president of the East Atlanta Community Association. Plus, we're going to explore the intersection of hip-hop and critical thinking and philosophy and all that. You all can send me your emails about the greatest philosophers on the mic. Those conversations coming up, but first, a check of the news. Georgia Democrats are still trying to make an early presidential primary happen. These efforts have new urgency now that Atlanta has lost its bid to host the Democratic National Convention, as we hear from WABE's Sam Greenglass.
Georgia Democrats hope an economic argument will sway top Republicans whose blessing they need. So they commissioned a study from Emory business professor Tom Smith, who says an early primary would deliver more than $1 billion in economic impact. Smith says it's not just about ballroom rentals and advertising dollars.
So if somebody's campaigning in Georgia and they're meeting with a bunch of pecan growers, they're going to say, hey, look, you make me president, and I'm going to make sure that pecans are a top export.
Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger says his hands are tied this cycle by his national party. Georgia Democrats have until June to figure it out. Sam Greenglass, WABE News.
A judge has blocked a federal rule protecting small streams and wetlands in Georgia and 23 other states while a lawsuit works its way through the courts, as we hear from Emily Jones.
The rule, known as Waters of the United States, defines exactly what bodies of water are subject to federal protection under the Clean Water Act. The Biden administration finalized the latest version in December, repealing a Trump-era rule. It would include small wetlands and seasonal streams. Environmentalists say that protection is needed, but farmers, developers, and other opponents argue the regulations go too far. It's a technical argument that can have huge consequences. The Trump-era rule took the proposed mine near the Okefenokee Swamp out of federal jurisdiction, leaving the controversial project up to the state. Georgia is one of 24 states that sued over the Biden water rule. The judge has blocked the rule in those states pending the outcome of the suit. Emily Jones, WABE News.
MARTA's board of directors is moving forward with a proposed extension of the Atlanta streetcar onto the Beltline. Now, there's been some opposition to the plan, though the Beltline was initially pitched as a project that would include rail. Concerns raised include the effects on bikers and pedestrians and the impact of construction on neighborhoods. Before Thursday's vote to move the project into the final design phase, MARTA board chair Thomas Worthy addressed the critics.
All of you that spoke against this, I hear you loud and clear. And I guarantee you that my commitment to you is I will be asking the hard questions, but I will be voting in favor of this today because of exactly what we talked about, that it's Atlanta's money and the mayor has made this a priority.
The proposal extends the streetcar east along Edgewood Avenue before traveling along the Beltline up to Ponce City Market. And speaking of MARTA, more electric buses are coming to MARTA's fleet. As Julian Virgin reports, the federal government is spending billions, would it be, of dollars on cleaner transportation.
MARTA has received $19 million to purchase electric buses and charging equipment under the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. The investment in Metro Atlanta aimed to cut pollution and bolster the region's public transit system. Democratic U.S. Congressman Hank Johnson says cleaner transit is helping address climate change.
The number one threat to our national security and to our way of life is climate change.
So far, six electric buses are deployed in Metro Atlanta, and officials say that number will grow to over 30. Julian Virgin, WABE News.
Atlanta-based Delta Airlines is posting a first quarter loss, but the airline says it's optimistic of a busy summer travel season, as we hear from Marlon Hyde.
Delta posted a loss of $363 million in revenue. Increases in labor and fuel costs contributed to the company's financial turbulence. But Delta Airlines President Glenn Hauenstein says there is a reason to be optimistic.
On international, we are excited with the momentum we're seeing and expect record revenues and profitability for the summer travel season. To meet increasing demand, we are growing our international seats by more than 20% in the June quarter compared to prior year, and we already have about 75% of our bookings on hand.
Delta has seen an increase in premium economy bookings as well, and says it is looking to expand those offerings to all flights by next year. Marlon Hyde, WABE News.
And finally, the Atlanta Hawks enter the postseason playoffs on the road in Boston. It's a best-of-seven-game series, and the Hawks will come back to State Farm Arena next Friday, the 21st. So until then, you can watch them tomorrow as they play Boston 3:30, and then Game 2 is Tuesday in Boston at 7 p.m. Let's see what these Hawks can do. This is Closer Look.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. It's been another week with another development regarding the proposed site for Atlanta Police and that Atlanta Police and Fire Training Center. Now, there are those, of course, who are supportive of the new facility to be built in the South River Forest. This week, the DeKalb County Zoning Board unanimously rejected an appeal to stop construction of the $90 million 85-acre facility. Now, those opposed say there are a lot of reasons. For example, the potential heavy police presence, the possible pollution and consumption of a green space that building the center would cause. Now, when we spoke last month, Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens said he was open to discussions regarding the facility's permanent location.
You know what I do? I say, okay, let's do a committee or some study to find out where else is there in the whole city that you can build that the people that's going to be within a half mile of it won't say the same thing that these folks are saying. But I'd be open to that discussion. I'm open to it right now.
Recently, in a series of social media posts, though, the city of Atlanta posted what it considers to be myths about the training center, citing there won't be Black Hawk helicopters, military tanks, and multiple fire ranges, just one. The Atlanta Police Foundation is funding a majority of the cost for the facility. However, the $30 million commitment from the city could actually be more. Closer Look has asked for an update on the city's costs. We have yet to get a response. And now some East Atlanta residents say they feel like they're left out of the conversation. So we'll talk about it with them. Chase Miller is the president of the East Atlanta Community Association. He joins me in studio. Chase, welcome.
Thank you, Rose. Honored to be here. Thank you so much for the platform that you give to the community.
Appreciate that. How long have you been an East Atlanta resident?
Yeah, I moved to East Atlanta in 2020. Mm-hmm. Moved to Atlanta in 2012, lived in Midtown for several years, and then actually had 3 years living in Amsterdam, which was really interesting. A lot of great things I learned from that city, but have really made East Atlanta home.
What is about East Atlanta that you like? How do you define that neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, I think words that come to mind are vibrant and diverse. We have an amazing sense of community. When we did a survey of our community a couple years ago, that was the number one thing that people loved about East Atlanta was mm-hmm. the sense of community, taking care of each other, looking out for each other, and taking care of our community. I mean, people are really, really passionate about that. We're also very diverse and in a lot of senses, and we really appreciate that and believe that brings a lot of richness to our life.
You all have been called an eclectic, very diverse community. We were over there not too long ago for our coffee conversation.
So yeah.
Definitely. And y'all have some good eateries over there, too.
So. A lot of good eateries and growing. It is definitely a destination. And, hey, it's a place where we can, you know, leave our car parked for the weekend and walk to dinner, which is really great. But you're right that we do color outside of the box, I say. So that's part of our strengths.
One of your members told us, I believe we were at the coffee conversation, mm-hmm. we were having it there, that they feel like the Eastside residents are being left out of the conversation about this training center. Take that further, because what do you all want public officials to know? Or what do you see you guys are being left out? Take that.
Yeah, well, you know, in 2021, Rose, when it was announced that the Public Safety Training Center would be built in the South River Forest, you know, it was equally news to us. We live about 2 miles away from the proposed facility, mm-hmm. A quick 5-minute car ride, 10-minute bike ride, and you know, really just felt that we were not involved in any of the initial discussions. Of course, just like the rest of the city, we had the same questions about, you know, why in that location. What will it be like? It's a new facility, but is it a new type of training? Will it be different? And just really felt like we never had that avenue to express some of those concerns. And even now, you know, we're very active as a community association. We have a very active business association. And we just really feel like we've not gotten that chance to be at the table shaping solutions or talking through.
You are here as a representative of the East Atlanta Community Association. Is this everyone's, I mean, as far as those who are active members, that's the best way to put it,
mm-hmm.
all of you all are opposed to the site being built where it is going to right for now?
Well, I certainly couldn't say that all of East Atlanta will ever hold the same opinion on
sure,
any topic.
Not all of
Rose.
East Atlanta, We're, but you're the association.
As an association, our main concern is with the location of the facility, mm-hmm. absolutely. And we, you know, we wrote a letter and we had a lot of dialogue and over the past 2 or 3 years expressing that concern. There obviously are people within East Atlanta who also have concerns with the facility in general, mm-hmm. you know, wherever it may be. But at the same time, you know, we deal with a lot of public safety challenges, and we recognize that something is needed to address those challenges. So
just so we're clear, you recognize perhaps training is needed. You just don't want it in this. You feel like this area is not the best place for it.
That's the main thing that we hear from our community. We dialogue on this all the time, you know, informally as part of our monthly meetings, and that is the number one concern and challenge. Why weren't other sites considered, or were they considered? We've never gotten answers to that. And is it too late? You know, why can't we evaluate that even now?
You said you feel like you all, no one listened. I mean, who's your representative? Is Liliana Bakhtiari, correct?
Absolutely. Councilmember Bakhtiari is a really great partner to us. Mm-hmm. She has been great on this topic in that she has truly listened. She's at our community input meetings. She was there on Tuesday night listening, hearing concerns, and she takes those back to leadership, we have no doubt. I think she's working to get us more at the table. She's working to get leadership more near and into the community, whether that's through our meetings, through the neighborhood planning unit meetings, mm-hmm. giving us that space to dialogue.
Why are you all, as an association, opposed to it? Being in that community?
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of key concerns. You know, number one, the South River Forest is just an amazing gem of a location. It's probably the largest continuous canopy in the city of Atlanta. When you think about tree canopy, it is a watershed, which means it's a gathering point for much of the water that flows through Atlanta, including Entrenchment Creek that comes right through East Atlanta and continues next to the facility. And you know, the disturbance that will be caused by the build and the development and the facility, the potential for future pollution, mm-hmm. is really a disruptor of that whole ecological system. And we believe will have a lot of longer-term impacts for decades, you know, that similar to what we've seen with the Chattahoochee and with other bodies of water, where a lot of development has happened unrestrained around them.
So I just want to be clear, you all as an association, other than Councilmember Liliana Bakhtiari, you all have not had conversations with anyone? No one has come to talk to you all?
Really not to my knowledge, Rose. And, you know, we were encouraged to hear of the mayor's efforts in the past couple of months to involve the community more. You know, we understand he's put together a task force, mm-hmm. with including community members. We understand that there has been a lot of door knocking in neighborhoods near the facility. You know, A, that's good, but B, we feel like we have not been a part of that yet and mm-hmm. would love to be. And C, I think that we would love to hear what's coming out of that. You know, so what's the output of those conversations?
Do you think it's a responsibility also of the Atlanta Police Foundation to come talk to y'all as well?
Absolutely. I mean, they are clearly such a big player, such a key part of this whole initiative, that we would absolutely welcome the chance to dialogue, to ask questions, to voice mm-hmm. concerns about everything from funding to the longer term strategy from their end.
When we were at Joe's, shout out to Joe's.
Oh yeah, we love a Joe's.
During our most recent coffee conversation, which took place inside the Joe's Coffee House, you know, I spoke with Liliana Bakhtiari about the training facility. Here's what she had to say.
My personal feelings are, I want this to be moved, and I would like for this to be terminated. My counsel opinion is, I do not understand at all the complexity of what the promises are tied into this facility. That I am not done asking questions, that I'm really upset that APF has left us holding the water, that the communication around this has been absolutely awful, that there's a lack of transparency, and that I understand, I know that the mayor walked the Boulder Walk and walked those neighborhoods and said that they didn't find anybody against it, but I would also encourage them to please come to my district where there are a lot of people that are very upset and that have a lot of questions.
That would be you all.
Absolutely.
You could, I think, he might be listening now. I don't know. Mayor Dickens, if you're listening, what questions do you have for him or the city?
Yep. Well, I think our first question is, you know, can we be a part of the dialogue? And whether that means to be a part of the task force, whether that means to engage in a meaningful dialogue between leadership and our community, we would love the opportunity to put that together and to be a part of that. I think our second question would be around the location. You know, if we could kind of once and for all understand, were other locations considered? Why is this the only location that works, right? And I think from the third point, I think it's not just about location, but also about the what will training look like in the future? Because mm-hmm. wherever this lands, it will be a part of someone's community, right? And it's important that we understand not just about the facility, but about how might training evolve in a way that's needed to address the concerns of the community.
So as far as you know, there's no one from your association that's on the task force, so.
Correct. And, you know, I took a fresh look at the names, Rose, this week, you know, preparing for today and didn't recognize any of them. Don't see any of our members there, but we would definitely welcome the opportunity.
So how do you get this message? I mean, you say you've been talking to Councilmember Liliana Bakhtiari. Is that not getting through?
I think she's getting traction. You know, I think that she's a fierce advocate for her community on all issues. I will definitely say that. I caught up with her on Tuesday after our community meeting, and it sounded like the message is getting there, right? Mm-hmm. And what that results in or what that looks like is still to be decided, but we certainly are hopeful that in the coming weeks we see some movement in terms of being at the table and a part of that discussion.
Chase, what's your response to those who say, look, this training facility also is part of public safety. Mm-hmm. It could deter, potentially, possibly, deterred other types of activities from taking place. Mm-hmm. Do you buy that?
I think it's definitely a topic that we need to dive into, Rose. You know, public safety for us in East Atlanta is probably, you know, one of our top three critical issues that I would say keeps me up at night, literally. You know, we have gunshots every weekend. We have increase in drug use and drug challenges in East Atlanta that has really grown, especially since COVID. You know, we really do need big solutions to these problems, and we do our best as a community association and as a business association to try to address or sometimes bring, you know, quick solutions, Band-Aid solutions, but we need to dig deeper and find real solutions there.
Have you all spoken to APD and to the zone commander from over there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they are great partners to us. You know, they typically attend our meetings once a month or if multiple times per month to hear the concerns. And we hear that they do, you know, they're working toward bigger solutions, but often it seems they don't have the resources they need to make mm-hmm. those happen. And so
when you talk about the crime, the public safety, mm-hmm. and you mentioned the drugs, are you talking about in terms of, you know, people selling or folks who appear like they may need another type of resource as opposed to calling the police?
It's
or mm-hmm. all of the above.
It's really all of the above. We have challenges with selling. We have challenges with people who are addicted, many who are living on the streets of East Atlanta and other places, who don't always know how to get access to resources or don't have resources to help them work through that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say Councilmember Bakhtiari and APD are very good about trying to make those resources more visible and apparent to those people. We're doing what we can to also make them more visible, but there's a lot more work to be done there.
So, Chase, if this project does go through and this facility is built, going to be built, you feel it will change the community or change the identity of the community?
For us, I think that it could. I mean, it's a huge presence, right? Especially if I think about East Atlanta, we are a destination for restaurants, for bars, for nightlife. I mean, no doubt that we will feel the presence of such a large facility. One of the biggest concerns from a lot of our citizens was around outside police forces coming in for training. And I know I've read various things about the veracity of that. But especially if it becomes a place where that kind of becomes a destination for multiple mm-hmm. forces across the country, if not across the world, that really doesn't feel great. That's very different from us, from it being a place just for our police force, for our fire and rescue, et cetera, that are, you know, helping to make our community safer.
Are you all going to, everything you just said today, are you all going to try and get a meeting, conversation with either someone from the Atlanta Police Foundation or the mayor or the mayor's, someone on his task force? I mean, what's next for you all?
Yeah, I think, you know, that is the request. I think Councilmember Bakhtiari has put it out there. I like to think that it will happen and that from that we can identify a path forward in terms of dialogue. You know, we're all wanting to come to create solutions that are going to address the needs of all sides, right? Mm-hmm. We just want to be a part of that process.
You know, there are some other issues I know that you all think the city needs to address on that side. And we actually spoke with a member of your association who says there's some confusion on whether DeKalb or Atlanta should respond to local 911 calls and that there are issues with your water system. Which one do you want to take first?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak about the 911 issue as it's a great example of the kind of challenges that we face. You know, we are on the true edge of the city of Atlanta.
Yes, you are.
We are the edge.
You're teetering.
We're teetering. and even our community association has a large portion of our community association boundaries that is in the county of DeKalb, not in the city of Atlanta at all. Mm-hmm. So we really have to think holistically. And the 911 example, because we have some people who live on one block who are city of Atlanta, and then the very next block are, you know, DeKalb County, not city, mm-hmm. or even house by house. Mm-hmm. The 911 calls are not always routed correctly, or they don't go through the right place, or when the police show up, you know, there's lack of clarity on where to go. It's really led to some life and death issues in the past.
Which leads me to this, because I actually have a question from a listener who wants to know, do you all utilize the PAD program, which is the 311, I believe, but mm-hmm. if there's also an issue of who should respond to said area.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we do work with PAD. That's our Policing Alternatives and mm-hmm. Diversion Alternative group. I think they're an amazing partner, and they are a great partner to us. I think where there's a bit of maybe confusion, or where we really need everybody to step up, is when it comes to the bigger solutions, right? So mm-hmm. what are the mental health solutions? What are the healthcare solutions? What are the services that we could provide to people who are addicted or unhoused, mm-hmm. and who either DeKalb County, City of Atlanta, Fulton County, who is going to kind of step up and be a part of that? We need everybody.
So is there a particular area that, for example, you can give, that you call 911 and then you give them the address, and what happens next? They're like,
Well, I will say at this point, you know, we've done a lot, and I would say DeKalb County and APD have really stepped up and come to the table together mm-hmm. to figure out how to make that work. When we discussed this issue last January, our DeKalb County police said, we respond and we show up. We don't question, you know, if it's in the county or if it's in the city of Atlanta, right? We all have gotten to a place where we know that we just have to show up. And I think we have made progress there. But bringing people together from multiple counties and the city of Atlanta is not an easy process. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just one example of how we have to do it and continue to do it to create solutions that are actually going to last.
As we begin to wrap up, we came to this segment. I asked you to talk about East Atlanta's identity. Where do you think is this part of town's identity? Let's say, I was going to say 5 years, but I've been shaving it off now to about 2 years for folks, because a lot can happen.
A lot can happen. A lot happened over the past three. I think we will still be a place where community and diversity is important. I think we will still take care of each other. I think that we have to figure out solutions to make sure that people are not displaced, that people who've been there for a long time are no longer able to be there. so that we truly do remain diverse and so that we do remain a place where people who've made it home for a long time can continue to make it home.
Chase Miller is the president of the East Atlanta Community Association. They said that they felt like perhaps their voices weren't being heard. So now you've said it and we'll see who responds.
Thank you, Rose. It was such an honor to be here. So thank you again for having us.
Thank you. No, thank you for representing your association.
In the beginning, I kind of wanted to be like my inspirations, like, you know, Tupac, Nas, and Eminem. Mm-hmm. But their stories weren't my stories.
Yo, I want to go to Mexico, dancing in a festival, wearing amber necklaces and everything in emerald. Going to the market for the fresh fruits and vegetables. Grandmama with her hands held, Mary blessing you. I want to go to Mexico.
As I got older and kind of learned more about where I come from and the things that topics that should be talked about that weren't being talked about in hip hop. I come from a blue collar family, mm-hmm. so all my family's construction workers. Like my tios, they're really literally on the roof.
Party full of roofers doing a two step. Watch out, watch out. My tios on the roof, going off like my tios on the roof. My tios on the roof, fighting with my cousins with silver and they
too. My mom was a housekeeper and then she cleaned houses, so I try to make that put it incorporated with the music as well, and you know. Talk about how proud I am of them, like my pride for being where I come from. So I also try to make it fun. I don't try to just make it all political or socially conscious. So I don't know. I make it fun. I talk about parties as well.
Location on the maps. When you get here, just park in the grass. Going off until we see the flashlights form the gabachos in black.
And that is Victor Mariachi. And you'll hear more about Victor's journey into hip hop later in our series. You're listening to Closer Look from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Hip-hop is 50 years old this year. It's music, it's arts and culture, it's fashion, it's political. It's a movement that started from the community, and basically, it is a form of storytelling.
Broken glass everywhere. People on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move on, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat.
I remember that well. Today for Closer Look's Hip Hop at 50 series, we stop at the intersection of hip hop and critical thinking, as well as those cited as street poets with an urban philosophy. So let's get philosophical. And welcome from Morehouse College, Director of Freshman and Seniors Academic Success, as well as he's a professor of philosophy as well. Been on this program many times. He's part of the Big Three is what I call him, Professor Ilya Davis. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Here's a question every guest in this series will have to answer. You ready for it?
Uh-oh.
Finish this. Hip-hop is...
imaginative. Imaginative. I think it's one of the more recent instantiations of what black folk create when you give them time. It's no more or less than the value of jazz or blues, gospel, spirituals. And I want it to remain within the context of African-American creative culture. We have a tendency to decide hierarchically what's better. We don't need to do that. And I think we undermine the integrity of it when we do that. I mean, let people enter. And I think the brilliant artists understand this. Mm-hmm. Guru, Morehouse graduate,
yep.
being one of them. His Jazzmatazz series, he mm-hmm. represents this idea of it's not better or worse than any other genre, but you can include all of them and create, be imaginative.
And coming into this segment, we heard from Victor Mariachi, you talked about, you know, listen, I want to put my culture in here, you know, and talk and what it means to him. So that's pretty good. Imaginative. Yes. Now, let's go back to young Ilya Davis discovering hip hop. What was the song?
Well, everybody knows Rapper's Delight.
Yeah.
But for me, I think the first song I learned in total, Don't Push Me, because I'm close
the
to
message.
That's
yeah.
right. I was overwhelmed by mm-hmm. it. And I think it is so representative of everything I learned to like about rap. And it also undergirds my critiques of my students' preferences.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Telling stories.
But stories that account for contradiction, social, economic, mm-hmm. and political.
So Because I got an email from someone said, what do you mean you're going to examine the intersection of hip-hop and critical thinking? And I'm like, well, listen. Because maybe they didn't know. Okay, I'll be fair. But there is an intersection here. We talk. Well, let's back up, because I always assume that folks know what we're talking about. Let's define when we say critical thinking. We have to do this, Professor.
Well, formally, you're applying certain types of methods and rules of understanding and analysis. Mm-hmm. And so what we're trying to do is create consistent evaluation of arguments. Everybody can evaluate an argument, and you may get your evaluation correct, but how do you consistently do that? Mm-hmm. So you're trying to maximize outcomes to produce the best outcome.
And hip-hop does that?
Some do.
Yeah.
We definitely don't want to say all of them, but some do.
So this next song that I'm about to play, this segment, I think most people will understand what we're talking about, because when I heard this for the first time, and I was like, wow, I love this cat. Hit it, Daniel.
Of course.
Public Enemy. Tell me about the first time you heard Public Enemy, because these cats. And listen, I want to be fair, because my father told me about the Last Poets.
I was going to say that.
So, you know, if you really want to talk about the art form of storytelling over some beats and music, I want to give you. And they're still with us, so we're working to get them. But for me, when I heard this, I was like, hey. He's talking about Fight the Power. Chuck D. He's talking about, who's this Chuck D guy? Fight the power.
And I tie in the message with that.
Yeah.
The message was giving an account of the contradictions within social, political, economic structures. So it wasn't just glorifying. It wasn't doing that. It was trying to demonstrate. And even if we were to stretch it, you have something of a psychological, you know, underpinning. Mm-hmm. You know, don't push me. I'm close to breaking.
Right. And I'm going to tell you why, because as Melly Mel said, you know, this is happening in my community. Yes. And then Chuck D comes and says, well, on top of that, what's happening in our community, we have another systemic layer that we're fighting.
Yes.
Fight the power.
And then KRS-One introduces our level of culpability.
Yeah.
Right. The teacher comes to educate you on your failure to critically evaluate the structures. Mm-hmm. So listen to me. And he begins teaching. You have value. The one on black women. The idea that you're not a B, you're not this, you're a queen.
Yeah.
Right. You need to take control. You need to say to yourself, reject these social structures that have undermined your existence and your humanity. And now that becomes a form of rebellion against these systems. And even before that, as you said, the Last Poets, I think I heard them when I was at Morehouse, and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me how people talk about rap and have a tendency never to really focus on them, because even the definition of rap, they satisfy it.
Do you think, Professor, because of, and we've gone through these phases, you know, New York started, let's just be really clear, New York started, then we moved to the West Coast, and, you know, NWA was a little different.
Very.
They had a message, but they were different. And then you heard other sounds. Of course, you know, we'll have a whole nother day for the South got something to say. Memphis has its sound. St. Louis has its sounds. But do you think, or where do you think, then the blanket generalization about hip hop and rap just being put under one umbrella, being gangster or, you know, anti police, and there is some of that. Let's be really clear, but also too, it's the fabric around it is about community and people's lived experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Not making excuses, because I don't want anybody calling my sisters bees and all anything, you know, all the other words, you know. But it is environment. It's community.
Mm-hmm.
And should folks understand that before immediately attacking it?
And so one critical evaluation is not to conflate what I would refer to as genres. I've seen people attempt to do this, but when we were at Morehouse, it was always interesting that we would have arguments. I'm being from Atlanta, so oftentimes I'd have to fight just to get legitimacy to be in the conversation because of the rather, you know, arrogance of the Brooklyn and Bronx and Queens and, you know, Staten Island guy. But be that as it may, we used to classify these. Mm-hmm. So we used to talk about conscious rap. Everybody understood that would be KRS-One. That would be Public Enemy. Mm-hmm. That would be the last poets, particularly Wise Intelligent. People like that. Then we had our what I refer to as Afro hippies, mm-hmm. Which is a beautiful blend because they enjoyed themselves, often to narcissistic levels. But then at the same time, particular ideological influence was Nation of Islam and the 5% Nation. Mm-hmm. And so you hear that. One of my dear friends, Carlton Usher, wrote a wonderful book. His dissertation became a book, where he talks about the heavy influence of the 5% ideologies within rap. Rakim, Big Daddy Kane.
X-Clan had a little bit of that X-Clan, as well.
Yes, you know? All of these. I was going to say X-Clan is the other one. So they would have been in the conscious group. So we had the conscious group. We had the Afro. But then the other group under this sort of Afro-hippie-ish, but a little more fun, engaged with Tribe Called Quest, Brand Nubians, and so forth. And I only bring those up to account for not conflating them. So people will often compare, as you said, and they say rap. No, they have different audiences. They have different aspirations. What are they trying to do in their music? KRS is not trying to do what Snoop is doing. Mm-hmm. Snoop does an excellent job at his audience. Mm-hmm. KRS, smaller audience, will not win a Grammy because of his principled position about what's important. Social analysis, political analysis, and so forth. So when people make these sweeping statements, they fail to understand, don't undermine the genre difference, right? They don't speak to the same groups. Now, if someone listens to all of those, that's fine. But you would not want to compare Shakespeare, right, to Faulkner.
Right.
This is different genres.
Absolutely. I want to talk about this next group, Poor Righteous Teachers, because for me, and it was funny because, you know, I'm a daughter of a jazz musician, so I would, you know, have my little tapes. I'm playing stuff throughout the house. My dad, you know, he's like, okay. But Poor Righteous Teachers, I love this. Holy Intellect. Let's hear
yes.
Yeah. Those who can't be themselves shall be destroyed. Students, listen to the lesson I'll be teaching. Learn by Holy Intellect because it's a blessing. Teachers, study what is spoken through the speaker. Weaker preachers, there's no need for manifesting. I'm the star. Soul controlling all within the soul.
Man. What is it about that era, man, that is just, the beat was... We had the beat, but beyond the beat, the lyrics were just, they were just as thumping.
Yes.
And I don't know if folks really, Daniel, play it again. I want folks to listen. Play it again, Daniel.
Those who can't be themselves shall be destroyed. Students, listen to the lesson I'll be teaching. Learn by Holy Intellect because it's a blessing. Teachers, study what is spoken through the speaker. Weaker preachers, there's no need for manifesting. I'm the star. Soul controlling all within the soul are poor. So I'm a righteous teacher from the heart. Praise your God. All praise is due to a law. Seven saw the Holy Intellect being taught. Grab a hole. I'm not here to promise any gold. Let's just go. A story about a traitor of that type. I tell this right. That I'm not here to feed your fantasy because that ain't right. I guarantee your everlasting life mentally. The Holy Intellect is infinite.
Perfect.
Yes.
And that's the consistency. So again, not perfection, but a level of consistency about the message and to whom you wish to be changed and recalibrated in light of it. Wise, intelligent, brilliant brother.
Yeah.
Beautiful rapper. I always tell my students, they say, well, you criticize this, that, and the other. I said, the problem is we had a healthy balance of conscious and I don't care.
Right.
You'll say anything to gain an audience. Now we've lost that thoroughgoing. I mean, think about it. X-Clan, Poor Righteous Teachers.
Yeah.
I mean, KRS. I mean, we could go on and on and on versus just having Dear Brother Uncle Luke, right? And Too Short. We had, it was Offset.
Yeah.
And these weren't radio performers.
No.
Right? People need to be very clear. If you're evaluating rap based on what you hear, you don't get it, right? Because it's going to be hidden under a bushel, if you will. And so that's why I said KRS, Rakim, we don't see Grammys. Why? Because they are consistently making an evaluation that is not going to be mainstream and is not going to be welcomed.
And so here we are. Do you think because of the commercial success of hip hop and particularly with because now everybody's a rapper. Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That it is more the commercial success, although Kendrick Lamar could be the example for that. Because, you know, not to hate on him, and don't y'all send me an email. Drake, to my knowledge, hasn't really put anything out that's philosophical.
Amen.
And I'm not hating on him. Save your emails. I'm just saying, you know?
No, but Kendrick's my dude. And so when students ask me, I say, Kendrick's my dude. We just need one amendment. Take the N out.
Why?
Because you're a poet, dude. It doesn't gain you any level of authenticity, because a lot of people do it for a matter of authenticity. Mm-hmm. You know, you go on and on and on. Then all of a sudden you drop the word as if your beautiful lyrics could sustain their value without the false sense that that makes you valuable.
You tell your students this?
Yes.
And they come back with what?
They're sitting there thinking, wow, because I already take a position against the use of the term. Now I'm saying Kendrick's the dude. His writing is so strong. He doesn't need it. It becomes gratuitous after a certain point. And I'm saying, dude, you're good. So for me, when we expand rap, as you said, and include whatever this nebulous notion of hip hop is, because it's always fluctuating, mm-hmm. I have to put at one or two, Lauren.
Yeah.
She is. Lauren Hill. Yes. Yeah. I mean, my God. And guys constantly leave her out.
Absolutely.
And that woman's, oh my God. She's a wonderful lyricist, mm-hmm. right? So she doesn't choose to be a B, an H. And Queen Latifah did the same thing. Mm-hmm. They were trying to emphasize
light as
the
well.
Fact,
yeah,
we don't have to have a false sense of authenticity. And what I mean by authenticity is I'm a real one, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to show you I'm a real one. So I'll toss these terms in periodically. Oh, yeah, they're from around the way. That doesn't get us to where I think the normative claim is we would like to think we could do something differently than merely describe our conditions and promote the best and the highest production of blackness without having to argue about authenticity.
And often I think it's sort of left out about the pain and the suffering if it's not, you know, these heavy, big, booming beats. And I want to play something because when I heard this, I heard pain in this. But there's beauty in this. So go ahead, hit it for me, Daniel.
Reminisce for a spell, or shall I say think back 22 years ago to keep it on track. The birth of a child on the 8th of October. A toast, but my granddaddy came sober. Count all the fingers and the toes. Now I suppose you hope the little black boy grows. 18 years younger than my mama, but I really got beatings with the girl of trauma. In single parenthood, there I stood by the time she was...
So Pete Rock, that's Pete Rock and CL Smooth, talked about this song. He lost a dear friend who died. And talking about the pain and the grief involved with that, where do you see this type of narrative in hip hop? Because tragically, when someone dies in the hip hop community, and everybody's got a tribute song,
mm-hmm.
you know. Whereas just back in the day, Pete Rock talking about, look, this is my homeboy, this is my dude.
And KRS when he lost Scott LaRock,
who was murdered. Yeah.
That's right, and so. I was hoping
right
to
after that, that debut album,
yes.
I think, yeah.
And this is why, I was really hoping to get on this, and that is we need to do a better job in the more extant presentations, the present presentations, of accounting for exactly those types of contradictions and trauma, and to account for it. And it becomes cathartic, I think, not just for the artists, for individuals who understand what it means to lose someone. And if your genre of music is rap, you need to be afforded the opportunity to work through sort of expiation of these types of things in ways that we did it with blues, jazz, gospel. Mm-hmm. So rap needs to now include that as another form of addressing what they claim to be reality. I don't know what that is, but they claim I'm accounting for reality. Well, all music does,
mm-hmm.
right? Just because you're saying it explicitly, because oftentimes the greatest account is the indirect message, not the direct messaging of what you want people to get.
So if there's a takeaway that you want folks to get from this intersection of hip hop and critical thinking or philosophy, what do you want them to know?
Be balanced and even, as I was just saying. As much as you like to party, you also need to give an account of the struggle. My students often don't like my critique of people like Tupac, because my issue was, on one level, people love his...
Let me turn on my headphones so I can make sure I hear this clearly.
Oh, yes. People love what his analyses were of social conditions. Mm-hmm. In it. But my point is, you won't make any money talking about the fact that your mother worked, my mother specifically, worked 2-3 jobs. went to bed every night and got up. Mm-hmm. No 40s, no salacious engagements with, you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make money, but we have to remove the financial, the remuneration that we get from saying what people want to hear and be artists and go after our lived experiences. That is, most Black folk go to bed, wake up, go to work, and come home. Mm-hmm. Where's that song? How do you account for the real? And that is people working to make their way in the world and many times facing the contradictions, social, political, across the board. So that's the responsibility. They're going to have to say to themselves, okay, we can play over here sometimes. You know how we used to say, you play hard, you work hard. Mm-hmm. The working part is, but what about those folk who are busting their behinds to get things done? Is there a song that could be done mm-hmm. irrespective of commercial popularity?
But do the big record companies want to hear that?
That's my point. You got to be like Pharoah Munch and others maybe, right? I mean, you're going to have to say to yourself, as I said, KRS is not going to win a Grammy. You just got to make it, man. And I think if you pool your resources, I don't mean brothers and sisters come together, you have to be able to account for the everyday. That's my point. Not the extreme margins, murder on one side, you know, drugs on the other. Mm-hmm. What about the middle? What mm-hmm. about those people who merely wake up, go to work, and look for hope in their everyday lives?
Do you have a top five, Professor Ilya Davis? And I hope your students are listening. Mm-hmm. In no particular order, you have a top five.
Of course, Rakim, mm-hmm. KRS, Wise Intelligent, Black Thought. You got me. I'll just, you know.
So Rakim, KRS1, Black Thought.
Black Thought. I love Black Thought. Oh, my God.
He's a young, beast. Intelligent. Okay.
And I'll slip Lauren in there, but they're going to say, well, she doesn't have enough songs. I don't care. The songs she's made have been better than albums that people have made.
Well, let's talk about that. Because when we have these debates, and I love these debates, people always want to go to, well, let's look at the discography. Well, I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at the content.
That's right.
You know.
The analogy, Ralph Ellison only needed Invisible Man to mm-hmm. be the man.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So Lauren only needed Miseducation. The rest of you keep catching up to that. She needed one. She makes another. It will never be. It could never. And that was the problem for Ralph Ellison in writing Invisible Man. He literally was overwhelmed by people trying to get him to recreate another brilliant mm-hmm. work. He did it. Once you go to the mountaintop, that's it.
Yeah.
Right. And so Lauren went to the mountaintop. She's looking down at others saying, catch me before you ask me to produce another album. Oh, I love her. Love it. And Andre, too. Don't forget brother Andre.
Oh, yeah. Andre 3000, as we call it, snappage. He brings a snappage. is there someone of the more, you know, we old professor, of the more modern?
Kendrick, okay. It's definitely Kendrick. But again, just that one word, brother, just pull that one word out. And dude, you will be remembered because you pushed against popularity and notions of authenticity.
Morehouse College Director of Freshman and Seniors Academic Success, as well as Professor of Philosophy, Ilya Davis, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're the greatest Pulitzer Prize winner to be.
I appreciate that. I'm going to play a little Goody Mob as I do my credits.
Oh, God, yes.
That's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are LaShawn Hudson and Daniel Razel. Tiffany Griffith is our supervising producer. Our engineer for today was Daniel Razel. And a reminder to let us know your thoughts on today's program or any other. Send me an email, rose@wabe.org. If you missed any of today's program, it's online, wabe.org/closerlook. And, of course, Closer Look weeknights as well as in our podcast. So subscribe wherever you like. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Shuffle with tyrants, the devil, man. The youngest, the killers. They martyrs, the shooters, the trash, man.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.